Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 242. It's international week, so you know they'd be pretty bored because there's no Celtic playing. So this week we've got another My Celtic Life with Charlie Gallagher speaking with St Anthony. Charlie played for Celtic for 10 years between 1959 and 1970 with 106 appearances and 17 goals. His main claim to fame was he was the first Scottish-born player to play for Ireland when he travelled to Ankara on the 22nd of February 1967 to represent the country against Turkey. Very quickly before we get into the podcast, just to confirm that the golf day that I've been banging on about the last few podcasts has now sold out, although there are one or two places still available for lunchtime and they're £40 per head. It's taking place on April the 2nd, which is World Autism Awareness Day. Tommy Boyd, Bobby Petta, Bertie Alden, George McCluskey will be playing in it. Additionally, the Foundation have had another fantastic, successful campaign with the Foundation's Cashback Gateway to Employment, which is it started in January 2015 at Celtic Park. Participants from the local community provided with tailored one-to-one support to help them move into positive destinations such as training, volunteering and employment. All participants have the opportunity to build on their employability skills, take part in personal development sessions, etc., etc. The Cashback Gateway to Employment will start again in May and will be followed by a further programme in August 2015 and then January 2016. Once again, it's all about Celtic FC Foundation putting back into the local community. If you wish to register your interest in future intakes or you may know a young person who may be at risk of offending or re-offending, please contact the Celtic FC Employability Coordinator, Alan Campbell, on 0141 551 4294. That's Alan Campbell, 0141 551 4294, or A. Campbell, that's A-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L, at celticfc.co.uk. So, another fantastic project from the Celtic FC Foundation, but that's enough of me. This is him, St Anthony, with him, Charlie Gallagher.
Today it's my great pleasure to be joined by Celtic legend Charlie Gallagher. We're going to have a wee history lesson and go down memory lane with Charlie and talk about his career and the hoops and his career in general. So first of all, Charlie, you were born in a Celtic hotbed in the Gorbals.
I was born in Salisbury Street in the Gorbals. Then we moved to Cumberland Street and it was really a hotbed. I remember a day, one day when I was playing for Celtic, we travelled to Seamill on the bus, the Cotter's bus. On the road, when we were over there, we were training in the sand, and I stood in a piece of glass, and I couldn't walk. And Big Jockstein says to the bus driver, "You'll need to get past Cumberland Street, drop Charlie at his door." Mm-hmm. And the bus came down along Cumberland Street, just past where the Brazen Head is now, two courses along the bus stopped outside my house, and all the Celtic supporters poured out of the pub, and they surrounded the bus. That was one of my memories of Cumberland Street.
So, but when you were a boy then in the Gorbals, who would have been your first Celtic hero, and what's the first Celtic game that you can recall going to?
Well, I never went to see Celtic games at all, very few, because when I was 12, 13, I was playing the Boys' Guild. And he played in Boys' Guild on a Saturday, so he didn't go to the games. And then after that, I started playing for Kilmarnock Amateurs, Holyrood. No, I was playing for two and three different teams, so I was playing all the time, football. So I didn't see many Celtic games. And in those days, Celtic Park was a wee bit far away from me, you know, to walk to. Mm. So I went to Shawfield sometimes, Cathkin, they were nearer, and that suited my parents a wee bit better, the fact that I wasn't going away too far.
So who would have been your first Celtic hero then, in terms of...
Well, my first Celtic hero was, I played with him, And I was lucky enough to play with him was Willie Fairney, because I thought he was a fantastic. Willie Fairney was one of the, and he was one of the nicest guys you've ever met. And I remember the 1960s, the cup run we had in the 60s, and I was used as a dummy by Willie Fairney, because every time I was playing that, I played every cup tie that season at outside right, me outside right. I could hardly run. And but that was Bob Kelly's way of thinking. So Willie Fairney was inside forward to me, inside right. I was playing the right wing, inside right to me. And Willie would go as if to pass the ball to me, and I would start sprinting down, and the full back would run with him, and Willie would turn away the other way. And he did that every single game, but you never, you forget about it. You're thinking about, he's going to give me the ball, and he never gave me the ball. So to me, Willie Fairney was one of my heroes. And up to the day he died, he went into taxis. I met him when he worked in the taxis as well. Now I loved the guy. I thought he was a great man.
And you were related to Pat Cairn as well?
Pat Cairn and I were related. Paddy lived about three streets along from me. He lived in Cecil Street. And Paddy's father died during the war. I think it was during the Blitz in Clyde Bank. And my uncle Charlie, got married to Paddy's mother about 4 or 5 years after the death. Paddy, my uncle brought Paddy up as well.
There's a lovely photo that you see sometimes, I'm sure you've seen it before. It's you and Paddy in a street in a Gorbals, playing football with a wee boy. You're dressed immaculately for the time.
Fantastic photograph. That was set up by, if I can remember his name now, he used to write for the Herald, the Daily Record, a wee back in the 50s.
Rex?
No.
Cyril Holm?
Oh, no, he used to say, "Yeah, a wee story for me. And he was known to everybody. And he says one day to Paddy and I, he says, I'm going to take a photograph of you playing the street, because the two of you were brought up together place, and we'll get some of the boys to do it. I wish I could remember that guy's name.
Holcomb.
And we went there and took a photograph of, we normally went. I went over when we were going to train, and we'd go with a jacket and thing on.
It's the style of the time. You're very dapper. Even men wore shirts and ties.
That was it. We just wore everything, and it turned out to be a fantastic photograph, because I've seen it all over the world. It in different places all over the world. But a wee rider to that story that I discovered not so long ago. Aidan McGee, remember Aidan McGee?
Yes.
Played for Celtic. His dad was a teacher at Holyrood School, where I had gone to school, and I used to go back to Holyrood School occasionally. And I was there that day, and his dad came out to me and he says, "How are you doing, Charlie? I've never met you." And I started shaking my hand. And he said, "Do you remember the photograph?" Now, this is a very, very strange thing. "Do you remember that photograph that was taken?" I says, "Aye, aye, aye." He says, "See that one there? That's me."
Really?
That was Aidan McGeady's
dad. He
lived in Cecil Street as well, I think. I says, that's unbelievable.
So you and Pat were obviously good footballers, and when you were at Holyrood, you were recommended to Celtic by the Scout Murphy.
John Murphy was the would-be in charge of the what do you call it?
Is that the guy who was a stadium announcer as well?
He was a stadium announcer at Celtic Park.
Was he a teacher?
No, he was supposed to be the PE man.
He
couldn't bend to save himself. But it was him that recommended. And at that time, I was training with Kilmarnock because I had been, this other guy that I knew had asked me to go down to Kilmarnock. Malcolm McDonald was the manager of Kilmarnock at the time. And I went down there, and Malcolm McDonald was very good to me. And then Malky left after a year, and Willie Waddle took over. and they kept trying to sign me. Willie Waddle was desperate to sign me, and I says, I'm training at Celtic Park. He says, and Willie Waddle says, well, I know you, I had the same predicament when I was young. I wanted to go to the other club, but he was a Rangers man, mm-hmm. so he ended up with Rangers. So
he understood?
He understood that at the end up, he says, well, and to be fair to Willie Waddle, and I know a hell of a lot of Celtic supporters did not like Willie Waddle, they didn't know like what he stood for, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. his mannerisms and everything like that. But as far as I'm concerned, it was a gentleman to me, because every time when I went to Celtic and started playing in games and we played against Rangers, Willie Waddle was the manager, he'd always come over and shake my hands and ask me how I was doing that. So it's a way, it's something you don't think about when you're playing, that people are rotten. People you think are rotten are not as bad.
It's different sides of the divide. He's fighting his corner, you're fighting ours.
It's not,
sometimes you've got to have a bit of respect.
They're not as bad, and I really respected him. Mm. I really respect him.
Is it true there was a Rangers scout interested in you?
It was to the it's funny. It was a Glasgow trial. And at Glasgow trial, I ended up being a scout for Celtic, and I saw the way the Glasgow trials were running. Mm. They couldn't run them in noise. They're terrible. And I used to, when I was playing in these trial games, a guy called me over. I'd been taken off or something at the time. I was standing beside him. He says, Charlie, and he mentioned his name, and he says, I'm a Rangers scout. He says, I would love to bring you to Ibrox, it says, but you know what it's like. Mm. I'm not allowed to. Mm. And to follow on that, when I became a scout for Celtic, I was in the same dilemma, because I went to these scouts, these trials, and I met all these scouts, and I met the same guy. And we started talking football. We never talked Celtic or Rangers, and at the end up, he says to me, there's what I've got to go through. Mm. I says, what's that? And he brought out his team sheet. I'd one, but there was nothing marked on mine. Mm-hmm. It was just the names of the players. Mm. And it was a cross against
the ones
that he couldn't look after. He says, that's what I'm up against.
Terrible interview,
thank you. We realised that, but it was only when I went a scout at the time I realised, God, that must be hell of a heart for a guy. Mm-hmm. No, to say maybe four Catholic guys, best players in the park or something, and he's got to ignore them.
Because that was always the anecdote, the famous story of Big Jock, that if it was two good players and he could get one of them,
he would buy a Protestant
guy, because he knew that the Rangers scout when they get a Catholic.
I'd heard that, whether it was true or not, that was one of the stories it was going about. Mm-hmm. I'd heard that story before. Right?
You were a great striker of all, Charlie, a wonderful passer. And I think for the purists, they like to watch you play because you were a silky footballer, but there's a story that I've heard about how you learnt to strike the ball when you were in Donegal.
When I used to go to Donegal every year on holiday, you know, and my mother and father lived there, and I used to go to my granny's house, and there was a gable end at the end of the house, and it was, I don't know how you would... It was these kind of slabs that were like, that, no. And they were all different shapes and sizes, and they're coming. And I used to get a ball out and kick it against that, and I'd kick it left foot, right, try and
mix it all the time.
Till my uncle caught me, and get off! you're going to whitewash that wall yourself. So I ended up whitewashing the wall myself, but I ended up. I thought it was a great, and I've said before, I wondered why football clubs don't get something similar and get it onto their training ground and get somebody hitting a ball against one foot, left foot, and then right foot, left foot, right foot, left, and it would give them a better.
I think if there's one example of you shooting, and I'm sure it's yourself, it was the 65 Cup final, you went to shape with your right foot and you swiveled onto your left and you battered the ball off the crossbar. And that's the one that went up in the air and Bertie got it underneath it.
Oh, that was a cup final.
And that was a cup final in 65.
Aye.
And that's a wonderful example because...
It's done now. All the players can do that now. And no shape. Well, not all players, most players.
It showed that you could shoot with both feet, because technically, I think your left foot would have been your weaker one, but yet you're out there.
Left foot was a weaker one, but as well, another note, and I can remember quite a few goals that I scored. The massacre of Rangers in the 1965, the 5-1 game.
Well, we'll come on to that in a wee minute. Get back to Ireland, that's how you develop your technique.
Well, that's how I developed being able to shoot with both feet. That was my way of learning to shoot with both feet.
So what was your favourite position of being there? Was it inside right? Because you were quite versatile.
I played right wing.
You stuck in the right wing. You played inside right. You played inside left. But did you have a
There's no favourite, because I was two footed, so it didn't worry me. It didn't worry me at all.
So the early days are coming through, but were very, very difficult at Celtic Park. And I was speaking to Pat Woods a couple of weeks ago. And we both mentioned that in order to truly appreciate the magnitude of Lisbon and all the things that Jock Stein achieved, you really need to look to the misery that came before it. And my dad's actually got he always mentions, especially when I was a boy, he used to say, we missed out on a generation of players there that they just needed nurtured the way Big Jock would have. And he says, I'm not saying they would have won the European Cup, but the guys like Donkey Mackay, Mike Jackson, John Coltrane, in his eyes, were wonderful footballers that didn't reach their potential because of
They didn't reach their potential because we didn't get trained properly. No, our training, before I signed for Celtic, I was there 56-8. Training with Kilmarnock and training with Celtic at the same time. Now, I was getting ball work with Kilmarnock. A number of balls thrown out at you, and then you'd play a game against the first team. Celtic Park, you get nothing. You've heard all the stories about there was no balls at Celtic Park. Nobody saw a football at Celtic Park for about 10 years. No, that'd be 56 for... Steen came in 65. Well, before that. But a full 8-9 years, no ball running round the park.
Was John in charge of the reserves when you were there? Or did you just miss that?
I missed. I never knew him in the reserves, never knew him.
You were a wee bit older, weren't you?
I can say it to you, don't think Steen liked me. That's my own opinion. And the reason is I wasn't a Steen man. I was a Bob Kelly signing. Every time Bob Kelly had signed me, Steen came in 71 and I was a stranger to him. And that's what I think. That's always been my... Because a lot of things happened afterwards we'll not go into that he tried to get rid of me umpteen times, and Bob Kelly says no.
It was
Bob Kelly's team in those days.
Yes.
But Bob Kelly brought out a young, it was him. The man at Holyrood School, he had them all over Glasgow, over west of Scotland, and there was players coming up, and we never knew half the players. I've got a big friend down in south of Scotland, Frank Glencross, his name is, you'll have heard of him. Frank Glencross. He used to write to me constantly, all these books here, I've bits and papers, Frank Glen. He used to, the amount of players, Celtic, he knew them all. He had them all written down. And not one of them made the grade, no. Umpteen, and
good players as well.
Good players went to other clubs. But
there's a story Mike Jackson tells that I think sums up the situation. At the time, he said it was a Wednesday night game, and he went in to report to see if he was in the team, and he bumped into Sean Fallon, and Sean Fallon says, "You're inside right tonight, Mike," and he says, "What's good? I'm playing." And then after about half an hour or so, Jimmy McGrory came in and says, "By the way, just to let you know, you're right half." and he's beginning to get a wee bit confused, right? And see when the team get put up in the wall, he was there.
Was
he? And he cites that as an example of how Bammy, the place was.
The place wasn't. Jimmy McGrory was a nice man, but he was only a name.
Yeah, yeah.
He was only a name. The man at the top, Bob Kelly, was the one that told you the team. In fact, I don't know who told you the team. Might have passed it on to Alec Bowden or something to tell you the team. But you never knew till the team was announced if you were playing or not. No, that's how bad it was.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
how bad it was. But you can imagine that. What's happening at Ibrox nowadays? They're completely away with the fairies because they don't know who's in charge of the team. So it's something similar nowadays.
That
kind of thing happened, but it was a nightmare at times.
So one of the darkest days would have been at Ibrox. I think it was New Year 63,
we get hammered.
And we get hammered 4-0. Mm-hmm. And there's a story that I'm a Govan man, and I think your sister stayed in Govan, is that right? Mm-hmm. And you went to a party after it. You're walking down Helen Street, there wasn't even a dog in the street.
My sister was, we got married to a Govan man, and the Govan man, Walter McKenna, his dad was a friend of Alec Ferguson's dad. Mm. Alec Ferguson's dad was a Celtic supporter.
That's right.
He ran the Celtic supporters.
He ran the connection street
in Govan. So I never knew anything about the party till just before the game, and I says, how am I going to get down there? Because my wife got a lift down, and I've got to walk down that road, and the worst, they get beat, we get hammered. Mm-hmm. We absolutely get hammered that day. But
it was a horrible day as well, wasn't
custom,
it?
Snow and sleet. The game should have been ordered. The game shouldn't have been played. Paddy Crearn shouldn't have done what he did.
Mm. No. Was that the day that him and Sean had it?
Him and Sean, and he told Sean what he thought of him. That was the end of Paddy Crearn. And Paddy bought his way to Manchester that time. And everybody will tell you that he was desperate to go to Manchester.
Paddy makes it as if he had to get dragged down there by horses.
I was talking to Paddy on the phone a couple of weeks ago. It's the first time I've spoken to him for years. And he was watching a game and he was criticising Man U. And I said, what are you criticising Man U for? Oh, he says, I hate him. And I'm saying to another guy, and the other guy's Big John McLaughlin might tell you, it might have been him. He's supposed to know, like, Man. I don't know if it's because they get boot or. But all his life, he's Man U this, Man U that, Man U the next thing.
He made a fair living out of it through the years.
I made a lot of money.
Man U this and Man U that.
But anyway, back to the. I had to walk from. Get out of the tunnel, get out of the door, and know that. I had a big Crombie coat on, a hood down, and I managed to get to the party, but it was a good party, but it was 4-0, it was a happy party.
So a couple of years pass by, and there's another New Year game, and Davey Wilson scores in the first minute
for the Celtic Rangers fans,
my dad included. The reason my dad remembers this game is it was one of the few games that he actually watched for the stand. He was always at the Celtic end, man, but for some reason, he ended up in the fancy seats that day. And he says, he remember just coming down the stairs and taking his seat and Wilson scored, and he thought, oh, that's it, you know, this is just the same old story all over again, and of course...
But see the thing, that day, the team were very, very... They didn't think, even though they lost the first goal, we never ever thought we'd have lost a game, because we knew we were a good side, and when we scored the first goal... there's no contest after that. Because that was one of the days, I was going to say, we were talking about maybe being left-footed and right-footed. I got a free kick just on the edge of the box, and I took it with my right foot and curled it, and it was headed into the net. And I can't remember the other goals, tell the truth, but... I remember, was that a game, the 4-0 game Bobby Murder scored as well?
Bobby scored a screamer.
Right.
Tiny Wharton let it through his legs. That was a wee story about Tiny Wharton, I'm going to tell you. Tiny Wharton, Mr. Gallagher, Mr. Johnson, very formal.
And we get a free kick just outside the box. And he come up to me, I says, are you taking the free kick, Mr. Gallagher? I says, yes, Mr. Wharton. I says, but we've only got one problem. He says, what's your problem? I says, because see where you're standing just now. That's where I'm wanting to pass the ball to. He says, that won't be a problem. I says, why not? He says, you just take the free kick. So he blew the whistle, I mopped up to take a free kick. I turned and Tiny Wharton was ready. And I passed the ball to the left.
And he dummied it.
And Bobby Murdoch, this was something we'd worked out. Bobby Murdoch ran in and I said to Tiny Wharton, I says, thank you, Mr. Wharton. It's a pleasure, Mr. Gallagher.
Really?
And that's what he says, That's what he says. No, he's a type of referee nowadays you'll never see. Because he would talk to you, he would say to you,
man to man,
if you do that another once or something, I'll book you, and if you do it a second time, you're off. I think he was, she not have won it. We Bertie played for Birmingham, and they were in the cup, they were in a European Cup final in Spain's.
First Cup final, I think it was against Zaragoza.
Fair, something like that.
It was the very early days of the European.
Yeah, very early days, and wee Bertie was playing for Birmingham, and referee was Tiny Wharton. I don't know if it's true it was Tiny, I can't remember if it was Tiny Wharton. You'd need to find that out, or another referee. I think it was Tiny Wharton, and wee Bertie's doing his usual, no kicking a few people, and he called Bertie over. We buried over the usual part. Mr. Wharton says, we've got a crowd here, 50,000, 60,000, only two Scots people here, to you and I. And it's supposed to, the referees just turned around and says, that's correct, that's very discreet. He said, we'll see in a minute. He said, there's only going to be one referee. Me, you're off. We barely tells that story. I can't remember it was Tiny Wharton.
It probably would have been the guy. It's either Wharton or Mount, because he would have been.
I think it'd be Tiny Wharton, because he would talk to you, he'd talk about you on the game, you know. Not anything out of the world, but just it's talk to you.
At least the human touch.
The human touch.
So, but when Jock Steen came back in March 65, what was your initial feeling at the time when you found out he was becoming the manager?
Well, my first initial feeling was good, because that was when we started playing football again. We got the balls out, we started back at Barryfield again. Barryfield opened up again to us, and we were training there every day. Hard training. Training, well, I don't know if it was equivalent of what Dyla's doing nowadays, or Delia, or whatever his name is. But he had us playing football again, and although I've got a lot against, I will never criticise him as a manager, and the way he managed us, he managed us great, football-wise, I'm talking about now, not man-to-man, football-wise, and he really brought us doing passing things, different techniques, etc. And the goalkeepers worked hard, and the full-backs worked hard, and the midfield, and everybody had working.
I know you were saying there that he didn't like you, but certainly in the early time at Steen, you were in the team.
Oh, I was the team.
65 Cup final, 65 League Cup final followed on, winning the league in 66.
I was there, but I wasn't there all the time. I think I was a kind of one that was sacrificed maybe a lot of games. I think maybe I'm jumping a bit ahead now of what you might be saying, because my best year was 68.
Yes.
When we barely got injured, and I played every single game after that. We never lost a game.
Well, that's worth pointing out, because that was the season that Rangers had their best chance of doing us in the Steen's era. We kept on, but as you said there, when you come back to the team, we didn't lose a game. And it was quite dramatic the way it turned out. The Rangers lost their last game, and then we beat Dunfermline.
That's right. And that season, the last game of the season was against Hamilton Mackies.
That season?
Hamilton. I think it was. Because when we Bertie came back, he went straight into the team. And there was a game at Hamilton, and
this is when Kenny makes his debut.
Kenny made his debut.
That was the following season.
The following season, was it?
Early
68, 69. I missed the season then. I never played another game for Celtic after that.
Was that your last game?
That was the last game. That was the last game that when we Bertie came back again. And that's when I knew that I was finished because I don't know what the record was, but it was, we had a fantastic record.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The amount of goals we scored, and Al made a hell of a lot of them.
Well, I know that you're being a bit modest there, because the guys like David Potter and Pat Woods described that as Gallagher's title.
Yeah, I know that.
That was the you made the difference, if you like.
I know that was called it that year. I know because I think Jerry McNee had that something to do with it as well. And Jerry McNee was married to my cousin, and everybody was saying, "Oh, your cousin's doing you good." I said, "Oh well," but that game when Kenny came on as substitute and he brought me off, I never played it. That was me finished.
I never realised that was your last game. I'd have said you'd a few minutes after that. The 65 League Cup final was a bit of a watershed, because
Although
we'd won the Scottish Cup, beating Rangers was always a troublesome thing at that period. Mm-hmm. And there's a story that Jock Stein put you out in the park that day, motivated, shall I put it?
For what game was it? Or the
one Ian Young done Willie Johnson
early in
the game.
He told Ian Young to get a tackle on right away, and at half time he went, "I meant a tackle, no fucking murder."
But I think that there's another story I hear of the period that Bob Kelly used to come in and used to say to the players, "Good luck, and you know, remember you're representing the club, and I don't want any sendings off, and don't want any bookings, you know, the good name of the club overall." And as soon as the door was shut, Big Jock would go, "Neither that nonsense."
Get this team done.
And somebody actually compared it, that Celtic were actually fighting with one arm behind their back till Steam came. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have that.
Well, we didn't have Sean did his best. But Alec Bowden was just a help in training. And I can't even remember the other ones that are there, tell you the truth. But Sean did his best, but Sean didn't have the able to control the crowd the same way Steen could.
Aye.
But they were good, they were fantastic days, even they were in a row. They were good days, no. As all the supporters realised.
And another thing as well is, and again, I hesitate to mention this because you were a footballer, as I said, you were the purists type. Remember my dad's
name? No, I would like to have thought that.
You were a skillful player, you were the kind of guy that the fans paid to see.
I was always like jointed white.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I was always kind of joint white style and all that.
But what I was about to say was that if you're remembered for anything, and it's nice to be remembered for something, it's the corner kicks against Dunfermline and Vojvodina.
Well, my wife, I used to say that, and all, everybody, that's all I was meant. I'm talking about, I'm 75 now. I'm talking the 1960s, 1970s, 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
People used to say, "Oh, I remember the corner kicks and that corner kick." And I'm saying, "Oh, and I did more than corner kicks."
That's what I was trying to say there, but you know, you did a whole lot in your career.
But this is what my wife, I say that to my wife. Somebody met me and she was there at the time, and I says, "Oh, I'm fed up with it." She says, "Listen, domineering, it's better you remember for something
than nothing."
Than nothing.
That's right. So you remember for the title in '60.
I think it was that commentator that did an article on me. The guy is, I think he's writing over in Spain now.
Who's that?
In Spain. No, wee Glenn Gibbons that died. Glenn Gibbons' pal. He used to go out with Glenn Gibbons, and he wrote an article a night before a cup final or something. And I was out in the park with, all dressed up outside there, and it was him that wrote a great article about me in a paper. I can't remember who it was.
I mean, to describe the two goals, to especially younger guys who are listening here, I remember the Vojvodina game. My dad says, in all the years that he watched Celtic, he never had a feeling that night as that he did when Billy scored that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "You had a wonderful habit, but when you took a corner, you could lift it and it hung in the air, and it gave Billy the chance to run and attack."
Well, big Billy used to start. He would wait till I run up. When I was running up to take the corner kick, he knew I would swerve it, and from the right, I would swerve it that
slightly
way.
Out.
and he would start his run then. And away back in the 65 Cup final, what was the opposite side? I swerved it the other way.
Uh-huh.
And he got a head, he got a thing.
Because there's a great goal, picture of the Vodge being Dina goal, and when I was a boy, it took me a long time to realise it. Billy is heading a goal in, Celtic's playing in the green strip,
mm-hmm.
and Billy's heading the ball in, and the goalkeeper's diving in vain. And it took me a long while to realise that the goalie, I wasn't the goalie. The goalie was out of message, if I can put it like that, and it was a guy on the line who was trying to punch the ball away. And that's such a dramatic image of the time, when you see Billy rising up and getting full force on the ball and the ball in the net. It's a wonderful photograph.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot of photographs now. There's some fantastic photographs out.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I get like, you'll have seen it, they're selling it as wee postcards and art galleries. Big Steen congratulating Billy on the 65 Cup final, and wee Bertie and I are beside him. They're selling it as postage stamps.
I've not seen that one yet. We could have a way out for that.
I think I've got one.
We'll get it for this. The 65 Cup final just after it, you had a party in your house.
Big party in
the house. And all the players were invited, but two of the troops managed to sneak in.
Aye, it was two guys we knew, two Celtic supporters, wee flymen, and they sneaked out. How the hell did they get into the hotel? I don't know. It was a central hotel, but the party was, and we came all down to the central hotel and went in there, and wee Gus Kelly, that's his name, wee Gus Kelly from Bishop Briggs, and I can't remember the other guy's name. He says, Charlie, where's the party? I says, there's no party on. He says, oh, there must be a party on. I says, well, we don't know. And we were in trying to see where the party was. My house, believe it or not, was the nearest new house. I just bought the house about a month before.
Where was that? Whereabouts?
It was right opposite. See where the big new swimming pool is in
Tollcross?
Right opposite. But, and it was top flat. And at the end up, he says to me, can we go as a barman? I'd made a wee bar up.
Mm-hmm.
Can you? No, it's just players on it. Oh, come on. We'll no even interrupt you. And everybody knew the two guys. The two of them are all right. So I say to him, listen, he says, no, you're not on. And he says, we'll eat a kitty. And we'd a kitty. And the kitty was about 100 quid, which was a lot.
I knew this.
He says, we'll double your kitty, and of course, right away, yes. So they ended up that night, a party in their house, and a few events started. I don't know if it was the night Jim Kennedy was there, because Jim would be there with us.
Mm-hmm.
And the midfielder.
George Conley
was there.
Mm-hmm.
And George Conley poured a glass of wine into Jim Kennedy's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Jim Kennedy, who's fucking doing that? My fucking, look at the waste of my fucking Celtic strap. No, and Jim goes daft.
Uh-huh.
And somebody says, calm down, Jim, you can clean that. He says, oh, it's my rosary beads are in there.
Golden right. So, when Vodge Vendina, we beat Vodge Vendina and then Dukla Prague.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, you weren't in the team when they got to Lisbon, so were you? You obviously part of the squad that flew to Lisbon.
Oh, aye, I was in.
Where were you sitting during the game? Where would you have been?
This was an argument recently over in Lisbon, where my seat was, and I could point out where my seat was.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Yogi was sitting beside me that day. He says, no, we were about. I said, Yogi was there.
Mm.
From where Big Billy had the cup, presented the cup, ours was down to the right, on the rows down to the right, and I don't know where anybody else sat. No, that was where the reserves.
So you and Yogi were together?
Yogi, myself, John Farr was on the bench.
Billy O'Neill, maybe?
Was Billy O'Neill.
Ian Young?
Ian Young would be there, aye.
I'm trying to think who was in the squad, and Jim Brogan and people
But they were never Lions, no, they never. Joe McBride.
Joe McBride, that's right, Joe the injury.
But Joe McBride, myself, Big Yogi,
Willie.
I think it was only five. But that was us, and we couldn't see anything because everybody was standing up and up and down. And when Big Billy was presented with a trophy, we couldn't get near it, but Big Billy would be here, and we were sitting over there, and it was up in the high thing.
Yeah.
Up in the high pedestal where he was. But,
so what happened afterward? Did you get into the dressing room?
We managed to fight our way into the dressing room. We fought our way in because we were blazers on. And the police, whoever it was, must have realised us. And everything went hell for leather after that. And a part of that night was unbelievable. Right. That was a night about, you'll have heard the story, Tommy Gemmell. Nah. We were supposed to be travelling back right away after the game. But the airport was chock-a-block, the airport, with people were dancing about the streets. So there was that many in Lisbon that night, Celtic supporters. They'd nowhere for them to stay or anything like that. So they were headed for the airport. The planes couldn't leave. Big Tommy. So it was an excuse to go in the round. And all your wives were with us. And Tommy's Tommy Gemmell's wife. Where's Tommy? Don't know. Disappeared.
Ran off.
he's away in the round. And all your wives were there, and they said, "You need to sleep in bed, to a bed, no." And Joe McBride and I were in the one room, but it was. Two single beds, you know, the wife and...
I've seen the photos,
I don't know how at night time, I don't know how I got to bed, I can't even remember going to bed that night. I ended up in bed, I know that, Mary probably dragged me up, but the rest of them pissed out of mind, absolutely. That was one day Steen never...
Aye. That's right. I mean, they were at the days of our lives. I mean,
those days, we'll never find days like that
see
again. Never see that again.
So, what Lisbon, around about the time just after Lisbon, you get the offer to become the first Scot to play for the Irish Republic in the parents' role. How did that come about?
Well, it was Sean Fallon, it was actually. Obviously, the people in Ireland were watching this rise to the top, you know, the Celtic rise to the top, and my name was mentioned, and they asked Sean, could you find out where his parents were born? And I tell you the truth, did you know where your parents were born? What streets were born on, or things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Your parents never told you things like that way back in your day. And I'm saying to myself, I think they both born in the island. So that was it. They just took my name, took it for granted that I was.
Were your parents alive at the time?
Oh, my parents were alive. You don't ask parents, no, where were you born? No, when were you born? No. I know my father was born in Ireland.
Yeah.
But I've got a feeling my mother was living with her, with my granny in Glasgow at the time, but it didn't matter. I got my two caps.
I
was quite happy.
Did you enjoy it? Was that a nice...
It wasn't a nice... the first game was in Turkey. And the treatment we got was a disaster. Spitting on...
Quite a volatile place.
It's a terrible place. Coming off the airplane, going on to the... Walking to the floor and they're spitting on you. Things like that and throwing things at you. That's before the game started. The same thing happened during a game. And was it Turkey? I can't remember. Was it Turkey?
I think it was Turkey.
Home and away,
wasn't it?
Czechoslovakia was one of the games.
Mm-hmm.
That was away. That was a game in Tolka Park, I think it was. But I found the Irish boys. I was rooming with a boy from the west coast of Ireland. And he says, where's your parents from, Charlie? I says, they're from Donegal. He says, that's down near him. Mm-hmm. And he says to me, this is what he told me when we were in the room together. Mm-hmm. He says, just what she's done to me, what she's Dubliners. Mm-hmm. Don't talk to you. When they talk to him, I don't know, and he's an Irish guy.
Because uh-huh. He was for the country?
He's for the country. He's uh-huh. The Dubliners, and I've discovered it since that the Dubliners, even the ones Celtic have signed, Stokes is one of them, mm-hmm. They're no for talking mm-hmm. to anybody. They're very, very clannish, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, that was my second game. We were playing, I think it was Czechoslovakia, and they were the champions of Europe at the time.
Mm.
So, but I got my two caps, I'm quite happy with that.
What's your story about when you went to get the caps? You ended up with an extra one with somebody else.
Big Steen again thinks, he never makes a mistake, no, Big Steen never makes a mistake. And called me into the office one day, and I says, you want to be boss? He says, aye. What's the fucking meaning, no picking you up with an Irish cap? I says, I've got my Irish cap. She, you've not got... No, this is... He argued.
Black was white.
Black. Mm. You don't have... Man, I'm saying, I'm fucking telling you, I've got it. You want me to bring it to you? Mm-hmm. He says, look at... They brought out a paper, an Edinburgh paper or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the story was, that's how the Irish treat their caps, their players treat them.
Mm-hmm.
And a big list of players who hadn't picked up their caps over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'll look her on it.
Common name.
It was from Ireland. So he says, you write and get that. And I says, oh. So I wrote, they sent me one. They sent me a strip. I've still got it in there somewhere. All my strips are lying in there. It was a Tommy Gallagher played with Hibs 10 years before.
And they gave you that one?
Gave me a, I took it.
Well, fair enough. If you didn't want it, you can take it.
So I'm saying, but see when I went and threw it at him. Well, that was it. I'm not to blame. No.
So the Ireland never asked you back then, after the two games.
Oh, I knew I would never get another. I knew that they were changing teams all the time. But in fact, a couple of months ago, I met two guys going to a game, and Sean's funeral it was. There's Sean's funeral.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I says, I know you two guys. And he says, who are you? And he says, this was on the bus going to the funeral.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're the Irish representatives. And I says, I'll introduce me. I'm saying, yeah, I'm Charlie. Yeah. Charlie, you played for us over there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They brought us back to a reunion. It was the opening of the Aviva Stadium.
Mm.
They brought us
in Dublin.
They brought us over to the opening, and Sean, myself, Tommy Coyne.
Yeah.
The three of us, and Sean's son went over with him. We looked after him.
Uh-huh.
A fantastic one again.
Well, that was nice to be
fantastic
remembered.
Weekend. So it was uh-huh, fantastic uh-huh. Weekend. And believe it or not, the Dubliners spoke to us then.
Oh, right, aye.
Because they realised, because there was one or two who had played for Celtic. Uh-huh. What was the wee left winger? Haggerty?
For us?
Aye.
Yeah, where was that?
Haggerty.
Why, they'd be back in the 60s,
aye.
The early 60s.
A couple of them, Joe Haggerty, and they came up and they talked to us and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was
it's nice to be remembered. You've been there for all the years.
You'd sit for nothing.
Absolutely.
So I thanked him for that trip, and he says, that was a fantastic trip, because they took us in a bus run through Dublin to get to the stadium, and the stadium was absolutely chock-a-block. We were all introduced to the crowd and that, so
that's nice.
Fantastic.
Wonderful to be remembered.
Oh, yeah, it's nice to have these memories, and you're pulling some stuff memories out in there.
Good. So, Charlie, that brings us on to the actual departure for Celtic, and it's always a sad time when anybody's got to go. So, did you realise your time was up, or was it a case of...
I realised my time was up the season before, when I wasn't going to game, I was in the reserve team all the time. I knew that I was going to go, but he kept trying to sell me, he kept trying to get me to go away myself and find somebody. Mm. And then one month, he said that he'd found a club for me down in England. I says, I don't want to go to England. I says, you just pay me my wages to the end of the season and I'll walk out. No, we're not paying you. I said, oh, I'm not what. He says, and they called me on another day and he handed me two tickets. He says, that's the tickets for a train down to Manchester.
What team was it, do you remember?
I don't know what team it was. Mm-hmm. He never mentioned any team, any. So, wife and I went down to Manchester, get somebody to look after the kid, went down to Manchester. And I says, I'm not signing for anybody. Mm. I says, I'm getting in here for a run. Mm. So, went down there, and it was, I've got a feeling it was one of the clubs, it wasn't in Manchester, it was, Manchester was the nearest place, no, it was one of the clubs.
One of these clubs.
And we waited. After about an hour and a half, I says, I'm giving it another half hour, and I'm off. Mm-hmm. Never turned up, so I disappeared. Mary and I came back. Following morning, I went back to Celtic Park, and he called me in from training. Did you sign? I says, no, I never signed. What the fucking hell do you not sign for? I says, because I never turned up. He says, I never turned up. And they shouted. And I can't remember, it was Willie Fearney's wife, it was still the secretary at the time.
Get
that bastard on the phone. That was alarm. You get that bastard on the phone. And that was the last I heard it. Mm-hmm. Because I told him I wasn't going anywhere. I says, I'm not going anywhere.
Well, see, during the time that you were in the reserves and you were a quality player, did it never cross your mind that to go to another Scottish club and play in the first team would have been better? No, I never thought of it. So, when the time came to go to Dumbarton, right, how did that come about then?
Well, when... I'm trying to think. I knew clubs were after me. There was two or three, or I was getting two or three offers from people, and I had a guy who says, I'll go your agent. I said, I'm not wanting an agent. Mm-hmm. We've got the money. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't get an agent. And when we sold it, they wouldn't let you get one, because I had one set up, they wouldn't let me. And I started, I never thought about it for a while. I was in a depression, actually. Mm-hmm. I was in a depression because I'd been all my life with Celtic. Mm-hmm. And we lived in another part of Bishop Briggs, Cone Crescent there. And we had a big, big house at the time. And I was in a right down on my wife saying, you'll need to do something, get something done. So she went out and bought a big load of paint. She says, paint any friends. I said, what good painting friends? Anyway, it got to the stage that I got a call from John Hosey Dumbarton, and he says, Charlie, we're interested in signing you. And I said, that's all right. He says, have you got an agent? I says, no, I've not got an agent, but I'll negotiate it myself. So he says, well, met us in some hotel in the West End. Mm-hmm. And Jackie Stewart.
He was a manager
at the time. Mm-hmm. He was there at the time, and he says, we'd like to build a team around you, Charlie. And no, he didn't. Jack was full of pattern. You were doing this, and you're a good player, and I want to build a team around you. It gives you a wee bit of confidence when you hear something like that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I says, well, what about, and then this negotiated terms, and I says, oh, no, I'm looking for a bit more than that. I says, and you've got a partner, I've got three or four offers coming in. Mm-hmm. I say, but I don't want to leave Scotland. I would rather stay in Scotland. And wee Hosey says, well, we'll give you this, and then we'll give you another wee, wee bonus.
Backhander.
The Norwich players knew, so that was a read. I was quite happy going to Dumbarton, because first season was a hard season because we had a good side, but Stuart hadn't built it up yet. Mm-hmm. And the second season, we had a great season. We got promotion and gave Celtic a couple of hard games.
It's worthwhile pointing out that you nearly the last laughing big jock because there was a League Cup semi-final that went to two games. Now, in the first game, it finished 3-3, and it went to extra time, and Bertie Auld had to score an equaliser to get Celtic a replay, and the best man in the park was Charlie Gallagher.
Did I know life into him that night as well?
Did you see him?
That night, that was a night. I'm sure it was a night to... I was playing and I played inside right or inside left. I never had any what I played. And Davy Hay was playing that night against me. And Davy and I were a good pal. I liked Davy very well. No, fucking hard man as hell. So he came up to me before the start of the game, and he says, "Charlie, you give me a wee bit of space and I'll give you a wee bit of space and it'll look good." I said, "You're fucking beauty." And David hit you. So, first half, we had a great first half in that game, if I can remember right. We were challenging, we were shooting into the Celtic end at Hampden, the far away side. We were shooting on there, had a good game. I think Evan Williams was playing that night.
Evan was a goalkeeper.
I gave him a stick a couple of weeks before I scored against him. Took a free kick outside the box. And Evan's telling Big Willie where it is, and I kept moving the ball. And Evan says, "Billy, he's moving the ball." And Billy's shouting, "You're cheating bastard, you're moving the ball." So the referee says, take the free... take the free kick. So I moved it again and stuck it in the back of the net. Evan won Billy on the heart. Anyway, back to the other one. And had a good first half. Davy had a good first half. Half time, he says, "Big Steen says I've got to start hitting you now." He says, "You're playing too well." So the game went on and on and on and on, if I can remember right. And I was still playing inside left, and I got the ball, and I was going past the dugout, and Davy was running to hit me, and all I heard was a shout, "Break that bastard's leg, Davy."
It's a big joke.
Like Big Steen. And I said, "That's fucking terrible, no, for a manager who managed for years." When I was really angry, and I'd stopped it, and a wee while later I got the ball in the same place, and I stopped outside the dugout, pushed it, teed it up, no denier, and hit it straight into the dugout and fucking hit Steen in the head. And he jumped up and banged his head against the wall, and the four in the dugout burst out laughing. Neely, Sean, Jimmy Steele, Bob Rooney burst out laughing. Steele was fucking raging, so he was. And referee called me on and says, "What did you do that for?" I says, "Well, he called me, break that bastard's leg." And the referee says, "That's okay then.
Play on.
The manager called me at half time, "What did you do that?" And I told him, I said, "That's okay." But he never spoke to me in his life again.
Never, ever again?
Never again.
Even later years, maybe, when you
never.
Cups.
Never again.
That's sad.
Never again. I hated that. Disliked him intense.
No, because I mean, you played a part in we've already described it, the early success. You think they'd be grateful for your contribution?
He wasn't grateful to him, different.
But Dumbarton had an early team at the time.
We'd a fair side. We'd not a bad side.
They were very good at getting guys like yourself and getting a wee Indian summer out of
guys that didn't want
John Cushley, Davy Wilson.
Guys that didn't want to leave Scottish football.
Willie Wallace. That's right.
When Willie Wallace was down there, we'd a hell of a good side to have.
And any young boys coming through as well, guys like Tom McCadden.
Tom McCadden's coming through.
Young boy Wallace.
Ian Wallace, what do you call him? Came through Murder McLeod,
Graham Sharp. Dumbarton had a great setup.
They had a good academy. It wasn't an academy, it was just training, night training.
And after you finished with Dumbarton, everything comes to an end. Did you ever think of getting into management?
No, I wasn't interested.
Is that
not
your
scene? No, not my scene.
But you did a bit of scouting?
I did scouting. They called me in one day. And had nothing to do with Steen. It was Sean was the head coach, and he said, "Would you like to do a bit of coach, scouting. I said, I wouldn't mind. And then they started sending me to some place. And Steen sent me out one time to look at two centre halves. Our centre halves, two of them were in the reserve team. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to see who were the better. And I'm saying, what do I know about centre halves? I said, would you know better going? She says, you fucking go and do it now. Mm-hmm. And there's a way out of West Calder or something, or a way out in the wilds.
Mm-hmm. And
it was two centre halves were actually on the books at Celtic. Mm-hmm. And he's wanting to decide who to give a free to. And I said,
you maybe just look for a second opinion.
No, to me. No, she what the God has got managed. Mm. Players that, I don't know, honest to God, I don't know.
So what was the story about Frank McDougall then?
That's the one, that's what finished me. This guy, Charlie McGinley, my pal, a guy I knew from Ireland, he was helping to run Perthshire.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me
Glasgow
time.
Perthshire.
Glasgow Perthshire. Mm-hmm. And his brother-in-law was in charge of him, and Charlie phoned me up one day. He says, Charlie, I hear you're scouting. I says, aye. He says, come on watch Perthshire playing. He says, centre forward is not a bad player. He's got a wee chance of doing it. I went to watch him. Great game. No, he was a hard man as well. He wasn't scared to go into tackles.
Was it Milton or something?
He came from the right place up there. And I watched him three or four times. So I got another scout. I was a starter scouter, you could call it. And I gave it to one of the main scouts, and he went, oh, he says, he's a crack, he'll be a player.
Mm-hmm.
So we passed it on. Next time I went to a meeting, I says, have we signed McDougall yet? He says, no. I says, why? Because it's £125 to sign a player in the days. £125? And he says, well, we need to ask John Higgins. John Higgins was the chief scout. Mm-hmm. Now, John Higgins was a holy, holy, holy man. Bring me mass every morning with Bob Carey, devout Catholic. Mm-hmm. And he says he was in trouble with the police recently. And he'd get fined 150 or £2. I get caught playing when I was at Holyrood School, playing in the street, and I get fined 150 at Govan Town Hall. Same thing happened to him, and he wouldn't sign. Mm. And I says, well, yeah, I'm hanging it up. That's when I started my taxis. And I got a phone call one day. I'm driving along, just looking for hires, etc. My phone went, stopped the phone, Big Billy on the phone. Says, Charlie, he says, did you try and sign Frank McDougall? I says, oh, £125. He says, I've just offered Aberdeen £100,000 for him.
Mm. And we never go on.
Never go on because
he went to St Mirren.
Did he not go to England?
No, he went to St Mirren. He went for Clydebank to St Mirren and then to Aberdeen. Mm. Aberdeen was the last move. But he went for a lot of money at the time because he was a top scorer in Scotland at one point. Mm. That was the days when Clydebank were cute at getting big fees
for Davy
Cooper and guys like that. And
well, that's what I says to Big Will. I says, no, we were getting up for £125.
So I missed out on Frank McDougall.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple of you things just to finish, Charlie, just about your family. there's one other thing I've got to mention here that was mentioned was the day that you hit Big Billy apparently at training.
Oh, that was a good one, that. I'll crucify that big fucking telling all these stories. Like, it was one day at training and a wee bit of scuffle started and it fight, yes, I'll do this to you, you do this to me, and Big Billy says, hit me then, I hit him. That was on. I get sent back to the Big Billy, blood was coming out of his nose and that, and Big Steen had seen it. And he sent me back to Parkhead.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, that's mean. I fucking talk to Bimble.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me into the office. He says, what'd you do that? I said, well, he asked me to help him. He said, oh, good on you. There you go. That's the first good thing he'd ever said to me. He says, you do it, but no, something like, do it a bit more often. Not to tackle, he means a bit more often.
A bit more devil. So, so the two things just to finish off is about your mother and father, a story each. Now, the first one is apparently, as with all families, you paid your mammy keep through the years.
Well,
and then apparently you got it back in later life.
Aye, well, when my mum moved from Salisbury Street to Cumberland Street, and it was a kind of new house there. We lived in a single end and moving into a bigger house, so I was earning money then. No, it wasn't a great deal. It started off with I was getting expenses going to Kilmarnock. And they would give you maybe £6 instead of £2 or £3 and I started collecting it for the other boys in town I did. So they would give me a wee bit of extra. And I used to say, well, that's for the keep, you know, and I kept. And the day we got married, my mother brought this envelope out and it was all the money I'd given her.
She saved up for you?
She saved up for me.
Can you believe it?
I told that story to Big Guy and I, and he burst out crying. An Irish mammy.
And then the story about your dad's.
My dad, I never knew, he used to save all the cut, he'd cut everything out of the papers. No, if I was mentioned, he would cut it out. Didn't matter what it was, cut it out. And in those days, there used to be a lot of school photographs in the papers. No, they used to do for a lot of schools, the Daily Record and that, and it was all... They had every single one when he died. I had to clear his house out, and I started pulling stuff out, and that's what I pulled out, all the stuff.
And you weren't aware of this, obviously?
I wasn't aware of it.
Because he never mentioned it.
He would say to me, you know, when I was living at home, before I got married, when I was living at home, I'd go home, no, how'd you do today? I said, 1-1-1. I said, did you score? Oh, you need to do better. And if I scored one, it need to be two. If I scored two, it need to be three. it was never one for giving the plaudits out to you. Which is an Irish.
And how did you feel when you discovered that you kept her? This must be quite old.
My heart went boom, boom. I've still got all of them.
I've kept them all. So that brings up to the modern day, and it's good to see. I still, although I don't know you and I've never met you before now, I know of you and I've seen you at the games, and you're very noticeable at the games, and it's nice to see some of the players for that era still going to Parkhead and enjoying it. And I understand that the club are good to you these days and provide you with tickets.
We've still got the tickets that we got away back in the Martin O'Neill time. We were offered tickets for life. Now it's still those tickets. They change them occasionally to different seats, but
that's fine. As long as a ticket's a ticket. Well, that's good to see that the club value your contribution.
I
think that's something that the club could do better with, because there's a whole lot of people out there serve Celtic well.
Yeah, but I think what they have done is the Lisbon Lions, they've treated us hell of a well. No, and I'm calling myself a Lion because I've got the strip. I've got the jersey.
Yes.
And they had us in Lisbon last year. They've had us in Lisbon.
Benfica.
They ran an anniversary a couple of years back there. No, they've done us reasonably well, so we can't complain a great deal, tell you the truth.
And what do you think of the current team?
Well, I was one of these ones when I heard this guy starting to talk without proving anything. I says, he'll need to stop talking for a starter. And then all of a sudden the team started playing well, and he looks a bit better now but he's still doing too much talking, winning, I'm going to win the treble, they shouldn't be saying these things, because if you're in the opposition and somebody says they're going to challenge you a bit harder.
And then when you don't win the treble...
You've got to be confident, but there's been too confident. Confident. And some of the players want to shut up as well, no, just...
But what about playing style? Do you like what you're seeing?
I like what I'm seeing now. But we need a centre forward badly.
This Gaudete,
I don't think he did his wee bit. I don't think he's got it now.
Mm-hmm.
He might prove me wrong. I've never seen this other guy playing.
I've not seen him playing.
Mm-hmm. Stepovich.
I think we've been fortunate. Griffiths is coming in doing a good job.
Griffiths is the one that...
He's a finisher.
He's not interested in anything else but trying to shoot for goal.
But that's a good sign.
That was what Commons was like last year. Mm-hmm. Commons every time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when Griffiths wasn't playing, I was on and on about the big John McLaughlin. They've got to get Commons. They've got to get Griffiths into this team and play him, get him into the team, get him playing. And to be fair, he is now in the pool all the time. He's in the pool all the time. But he still brings them off, and he shouldn't bring them off.
Mm-hmm.
But again, no.
Well, fingers crossed that we've turned the corner now and we're seeing things.
Again, they're on and on about, oh, we're going to win this League Cup this week, and then we're going to win the Scottish Cup.
Well, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed, aye, hopefully.
Well, that brings us to the end, Charlie. I'd just like to thank you for giving us your time and hope that you're still following Celtic for many years in the future.
Well, I hope you've learnt a wee bit.
Well, it's been
about my life.
Thoroughly enjoyable on my part, and I'm sure everybody else will enjoy it as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while.
I hope you enjoyed that fantastic interview once again between St Anthony and Charlie Gallagher, looking back on an excellent Celtic playing career. Moved on to Dumbarton after leaving Celtic. And that's enough of the Celtic Underground podcast for another week. There'll be more along soon, as I said last week. Interestingly and fascinatingly, podcast number 243 will follow this one, number 242, and then it'll be followed by 244. But that's enough of me, Harry Brady. This is me saying good night. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring